Here's an aviation employment niche you might not have explored. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Danny Mortensen. He has a lot of credentials behind him, but really, I think a lot of our listeners will be familiar with Danny most of all for having been the master of ceremonies for the last 25 years at Theater in the Woods at Oshkosh. Danny, thanks for taking a few minutes out for us today.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Well, first of all, how did you get roped into this job at AirVenture, and do you enjoy it? You must enjoy it.
Oh, I do. It's an opportunity to meet all these people in aviation you hear about for so many years. I actually was walking by the Theater in the Woods the night before the show started about 25 years ago and looking for a place to do a forum, and you know, you only put 150, 200 people in one of the forum tents, and I looked at that and thought, they're not even using this. This would be great. So I approached my sponsor at the time from the air races, AMSOIL, and they said, go for it. So I approached EAA, and pretty soon we had an evening with champions, and it started out the first couple of years with air racers from Reno. And then it evolved into everybody we could get our hands on that wanted a forum to talk about something that would be interesting to the EAAers.
Well, and it's come to fill an important role for EAA, too, because for the folks who camp there, which is a fair number, it's good to have evening activities. And now they're even doing fly-in movies, as they're calling them.
Yes, they are. And, you know, there's about 25,000 people camped out there in the woods between the airport and the freeway.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting how that's evolved. Now every nook and cranny of that, you know, area is filled with something,
yeah.
A great part of the day and night. Well, the reason we wanted to talk to you is because you're operating a dispatcher school, and I recently read something that you wrote about training and thought you might be an interesting person to talk to in this area. What I'm hearing, and tell me if I have this number right, is that the commercial flying industry is going to need tens of thousands of pilots over the next few years, and we're not really sure where they're all going to come from.
Well, that's true, and typically over the years, the aviation industry has run in approximately 10-year cycles for hiring, and then downturns, and then 10-year cycles for hiring again, and we're back into that fourth year or so of the upswing, and there is a big shortage of qualified people in aviation for the airlines and the commuters. And then we're not just talking pilots, we're talking dispatchers. And it's worldwide. It's not just here in this country.
All right. Now, when you talk about dispatchers, you're talking about the folks who coordinate when pilot crews are in a given place at a given time. And
well, that would be our crew schedulers. The dispatcher is equally responsible for the airplane, as is the captain. And they have a term we call operational control, where both parties sign for the airplane agreeing the flight can be made safely and legally. So it's a licensed position with the FAA as an aircraft dispatcher. You work in the company headquarters, and you do all the pre-flight planning for the captain before he arrives at the airport.
Okay, so you have a role in making sure the equipment is ready to go when the people get there.
Yes, you do the weight and balance, you do the flight route planning, and you do order the fuel. You might even do the some of the other miscellaneous things that the captain hasn't got time to do. It's a very responsible position, and if a captain makes $200,000 a year, a senior dispatcher makes half of that. So my point to all the young people is, if you're going to work 8 hours a day, why don't you go where the money's at? If you're going to put in 8 hours, you might as well get paid the best money there is.
All right. Well, let me ask you how you got into this, because I see on your background that you were an air traffic controller up until the PATCO strike in 1981.
Right.
Now, one of the things I've never really understood about that event in aviation history is why so many controllers felt they had to stay out.
Well, it wasn't money, as the press picked up on. There were a number of safety issues, and we had about 100 things on the table that we wanted to negotiate with the FAA and the new contract. And the FAA didn't want to negotiate with us. And again, they've got the same problem they've got right now that they had back in 83. And I think morale's the worst it's ever been. The controllers are retiring in record numbers, and the FAA is not filling the slot. So if young people are looking for a place to go, if they don't feel qualified to fly an airplane, they certainly might feel qualified to work traffic. And there's going to be a tremendous opportunity for young people, probably 5,000 or 6,000 jobs in the next 5 years.
One of the things that strikes me as odd about the situation with air traffic controllers, now as then, the union was prohibited from striking.
Yes.
There are only so many negotiating tools left in the toolbox when you're in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones that NATCA now seems to pull out as frequently as possible is to discredit the FAA or make them look like buffoons.
Well, there are a lot of good people working in the FAA, and of course, it's always an easy target when you talk about taking shots at the government.
But, any federal agency is going to have its issues in that regard. But I guess what I'm getting at is this kind of a built-in guarantee that this relationship is going to fail? Because it seems to be one of the few things they have left that is effective is to embarrass the FAA before Congress or before other constituent groups.
It's probably the only tool they've got is the press, and they're certainly using it to their advantage at this point. But life will go on, and they are not going to go out on strike. The FAA has hired back several hundred of the ex PACO controllers, mm-hmm. even though they're over age. I got a letter last December asking if I'd like to come back, and that was at age 60.
Wow.
Yeah, so they are looking for people, and I don't know what's going to happen with that situation. I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to it, but the NATCA is not going to go out and strike. They're going to continue working, but a lot of the senior people are retiring early. And there's going to be lots of openings there for young people.
Well, let's talk about the openings you are paying attention to, and that is within the industry. Now, you work in the industry of cargo. How did you come to the decision to operate a school for dispatchers? That seems like a fairly niched operation.
Well, everybody's got an interesting story to tell. I actually came in the back door. I was up in Reno, Nevada, running my business, Airline Ground Schools, and Skip Everett at Sierra Academy in Oakland, California, called me in 1993 and said, my instructor just died of a heart attack. We have a dispatcher class, a 10-week 727 dispatcher class starting in 3 days on Monday. Can you come down and teach it for me? And so I ended up going down for 10 weeks, coming home on weekends to Reno. And after we graduated that class, the FAA subsequently called me up in Reno and said, we're too busy to do all these oral practicals down here. Can you be our dispatch examiner for us? So I kind of worked my way in the back door on that whole project and been an examiner ever since.
Well, let me ask you about the job of a dispatcher. How many of these folks are there, and what is a good preparation in your life before you get to your course in order to be ready for a job like this?
Well, there's about 12,000 licensed dispatchers under the FAA over the years. How many are active right now? Certainly not that many. Each airline has its own dispatcher office. American has approximately 150, 175 dispatchers working at their company headquarters in Dallas. Southwest has probably close to that number of people, as does FedEx and UPS. So the larger air carriers have large contingents. They don't have a lot of people retiring at high rates, but because the majors are giving a lot of their smaller routes or shorter routes to the commuters, there's a tremendous boom going on right now at the commuter level for pilots and dispatchers. So it doesn't require any aviation background to get into that position as a dispatcher. You just have to go to class for 6 weeks or 13 weekends or do a distance learning class and then attend class for 6 days under a distance learning format and finish up the program, get licensed, and the airlines are just waiting to interview when you walk out the door.
That's very exciting sounding, especially for someone who may have enjoyed flying as an avocation and maybe facing a career change partway through their working life.
Some people feel like, well, it's going to cost a lot of money to become a pilot. I would suspect $30,000 or $40,000 to get up to that point where you're qualified for an airline with all the ratings. But they're hiring at the commuters kids with as little as a commercial instrument multi-engine license with just a couple hundred hours now.
Oh, yeah, to be a pilot.
Yes.
But I'm talking about to be a dispatcher, if you want to pursue this, is it helpful or does it really not matter if you have an aviation background, a pilot's license?
You do not have to have a pilot's license. It's not required. you're doing is like planning the trip from here to California on Interstate 80. And where are you going to stop tonight? Where are you going to get gas? And how many hours is it going to take? And what speed you're going to go? So it doesn't take much. All you need to be able to do is operate a simple pocket calculator, add, subtract, multiply, and divide.
Well, I suppose it's no different from planning a road trip, only a little more is on the line. But
well, that's true.
I guess what I'm getting at is when they go to do weight and balance and some of these critical things, do they have the same priorities in mind, the same safety ethic as someone
yes.
who has actually been up there and lived it?
Yes. Yes, you have to meet certain requirements. You have to do it correctly. There's no room for error. And, again, you have to be safe and legal. You have to meet both those requirements. And, again, you're co-signing for the airplane with the captain. And if either party disagrees about the situation, the airplane doesn't leave the gate. Check and balance system.
If someone did want to look into this corner of aviation, how would they find out more about the school?
Well, all you need to do is type in aircraft dispatcher or dispatcher on the Internet, do a Google search, or you certainly could call Airline Ground Schools, 800-824-4170. And there are about 20 schools around the country, and they're all licensed by the FAA to teach dispatcher training. So, the consumer needs to shop around, decide what's the best program for them and where they're going to go.
All right, and we'll link them from the data block that accompanies this interview to agschools.com, which I know will put them in touch with you as well.
Oh, sure.
Danny, we need to take a break here. When we come back, I want to talk about something else you're working on these days.
All right.
And that's the composite P-51. It sounds like a fascinating project.
Okay, great.
My guest is Danny Mortensen. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Danny Mortensen, who many of our listeners will know as the Master of Ceremonies for Theater in the Woods at EAA AirVenture Oshkosh for the past 25 years. Danny, you guys have a group together now that's working on composite P-51. What are you guys thinking?
Well, a couple of world speed records, maybe the national championships at Reno here in the next couple of years. Myrtle Cameron's a retired Delta captain who started this project a number of years ago. And as we've built and flown the prototype project, and now we're working on the, and that was proof of concept, now we're working on the first prototype, so to speak, and it should be flying about a year, year and a half from now up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Well, the P-51 has always been known as a fast plane. Have the aerodynamics of an airplane designed that long ago held up well enough that this is still a practical basis for going out and setting records?
Oh, sure. You know, the folks up at Reno racing the aluminum P-51s have set a couple world speed records in recent years. And this airplane is half the weight of those P-51s and it's all composite materials and laminar flow. There's no rivets on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the computer projections show 585 miles an hour, and that's about the record's about 515 up there at Reno on the course. So we're kind of excited about it.
Well, now you've built a personal Allison V-12 collection. Was that in preparation for this project or just because you've been working with these airplanes over the years?
Yes. No, the V-12-1710 series Allison powered the first P-51s early in the war, and subsequently they went with Rolls-Royce Merlin engines. But there are a lot more Allisons out there, and they're a little cheaper. And we think we can get as much horsepower out of an Allison as they're currently getting out of the Rolls. And we'd like to be the only Allison up at Reno and embarrass all those Rolls drivers.
Well, now I have to ask you about air racing, because I don't know a lot about the way the classes are organized and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to build a P-51 replica out of carbon fiber, does it really matter what you use for it? I mean, does the engine have to be authentic to race in a particular class?
It has to be a piston engine, and there's only two engines currently that really could do the job, either Rolls Merlin or an Allison. And everyone up there is flying Rolls because the preference for most Warbird folks with the later World War II fighters was a Rolls. It had a high-performance capability the Allison didn't have early in the war. But towards the end of the war, Allison caught up with them. They shared technology with each other between Rolls and Allison. So they helped each other with their development problems. And we've got something in our back pocket in the way of Ed Cooper down in Evansville, who set the world speed record in a hydroboat or hydroplane on the river. With two Allisons in the boat with two superchargers, mm-hmm. or one Allison and two superchargers, and he knows how to get horsepower out of these engines. So we're hoping to have Ed eventually build up a race engine for us to go to Reno and beat those Rolls Merlins around the pylons.
Well, this is great to watch. When might we see this happen?
Oh, it's probably 2 years down the road. We've been working. It's not a like we got to be there next year. We're mm-hmm. taking it nice and slow, and could be three, but it'll happen.
Listen, Danny, it's been great to get to know you a little bit. You are involved in some really interesting things, and we may want to look you up from time to time to talk about some of the other ones.
Well, great. Next time you walk by the Theater in the Woods, come over backstage and say hello.
I'll do that.
All right.
My guest has been Danny Mortensen, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero, that's A-E-R-O-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.